welcome to Bagel Tech Big, the midweek show from the Bagel Tech Network, with me, Ewan Rankin, and I'm awfully sorry we've had to change nights. We're doing it on a Thursday, which actually I'm quite enjoying. I'm not too bad with a Thursday. Fridays is a tiring day because we've got lots of shows anyway, but tomorrow night I'm out, so and everyone else can be as well, which is nice. We've got a fantastic panel for you this evening, starting top left, Mr. James Hart.
Good evening, Mr. Rankin.
I know
you mean about Thursdays. I am 20% less tired than I normally am.
Yeah, no, it's good. I like it. Should we do Thursdays from now on?
Let's see how it goes.
All right, okay.
Nicely put, Sarah. Yeah.
I'm not saying yes. I'm not saying no. Good week?
Yeah, so far, yes.
Not over yet. I haven't had a whole
Absolutely.
Week to screw
it could
up.
All go yeah. horribly wrong tomorrow, but let's hope not, eh? Let's be optimistic.
Right. 5:45 start, so.
So how was your 0.8 of a week then?
Your 0.8. Talking of weeks, Mike from the Bro Show, Mike Hurley's joining us again. Hello, mate.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Premier Big Show appearance. You've done Mac, got that under your belt, but now it's big.
I'm just trying to make one appearance in all the shows.
And then that's it. You're not going to...
Then I'm retired.
You're going to chuck us because you've got a complete set.
Yeah, just hang up the boots.
Good man. Good man. Below him, our resident sysadmin, our traveller to the land of Apple. Sorry, California. Sarah, how are you doing, mate?
I'm doing fine. Well, it's funny you say Apple because I did actually spend quite a bit of time in the Apple store in San Francisco, particularly using their Wi-Fi because it was rock solid.
Oh, right. Did you go out to Infinity Loop and visit the mothership, no?
Yeah, I did, actually.
Oh, that's got to hurt.
Yeah.
That admission really hurts.
I know.
Jet lag free?
Now, yes, but I must admit, it took me a few more days longer than I thought it was going to. Must be something to do with my age.
do they let you see much at the Apple campus? Is there much to see, if I were to go down there?
No, I didn't go down there. I was only joking, Eric.
Okay. I can't believe she'd be seen dead down there.
They should have a visitor's centre, shouldn't they?
No, the Apple store in San Francisco was as close as I got to that. So,
I think I've heard the only thing that visitors can see is the original Apple store, which, in addition to selling Macs, also sells a bunch of T-shirts and paraphernalia.
Yeah. Mm. I think the mothership shirt was the big one that was there. And last but by no means least, Sarah's lunch partner last week, Eric.
Hey, guys.
How's it going, mate? How was Tech Talk back tonight?
It was horrible. Did you see it? There was nothing to talk about. I don't know what we're going to talk about now. I see you don't even have an Etherpad for today. There's nothing going on.
Well, no, because it was kind of... I've had a bit of a tough week jotting around and everything. But no, I've been sat on the motorway for 4 hours trying to get back from Acton to in West London back home. It's taken me 4 hours because they closed the M1, which is like a main motorway up from north to south. So, and I've also been a bit in the sticks as well at times, so I haven't had good internet access this week. So I'm making it up as I go along with a lot of help from Mike. Thank you, Mr. Hurley. I do appreciate
no problem.
It. Cheers, pal. So the week in technology, I've got a big list here. Crib sheet, there we go. Spotify, we've got their interaction with Facebook and a few of the other social networks alleged. Isn't. Apple versus Logisys, that's kind of gone away because Apple have said, come and have a go if you think you're hard enough. Amazon have got a Mac download store, which has gone live today, which that could be quite interesting with the Mac malware thing, especially with Mac malware now being able to launch itself to install without admin authority. And Google's wallet system, the NFC payment system, has come live as well. Is going live in summer. And Twitter bought TweetDeck for $40 million, which for a free application doesn't sound like a bad deal, does it? What do you want to start with? Anyone got any pressing things that they really want to have a chat about? Should we start
What do you guys think of the Google wallet?
NFC payments. So this is, I've not read a lot about this. So fill us in here, Eric, on what you've got so far.
Sure. So I was just taking a look at it a few minutes ago, trying to see if there's anything that I missed about it. Apparently, it's the ability to tap your phone against the thing and the thing makes a payment. And in addition to the thing, it also gives you offers. And I can't imagine why anyone would want to use this.
This is, I mean, they've been kind of bandying around this idea that near-field communications is coming to phones because everyone's been playing with it and there's been lots of information about prototypes carrying NFC. And you won't carry a wallet with credit cards. The idea is you'll have your credit cards on your phone and you just touch your phone against something and it makes an automatic transfer. So, James, you've got presumably an Oyster card or...
I've got an Android phone. It goes boing.
Right. So when you push it against something, it boings. What do you transfer off that, though?
Nothing yet, because I'm too scared. But I've got an Oyster card, and what you can do, apparently, is you can chop out a little chip on the Oyster card, and you can put it in anything, like a banana or a megaphone or a glass of water or a magic wand, which is quite cool. It's all to do with universal acceptance, isn't it? Where will it be accepted? Because I think, isn't it, Barclays have started rolling out theirs as well, micropayment cards.
Yeah, there was something a few weeks ago about that. I think they were trialing, and I remember seeing something on the BBC website about this.
Is it going to be a mad rush, do you think, Sarah Jane?
Sorry?
Is everybody's gone, right, let's do paperless, moneyless transactions, and it's the first one to get to the finish line wins.
Well, this isn't new, though, is it? I mean, I work for a firm where I'm required to have an ID tag, and if I want to eat in their canteen, I can't physically give them money. I have to take it to a machine, slide it in, load it up with 40 quid's worth of money, and then for the next few weeks when I'm down there, if I want lunch or a coffee, I just pass it in front of a reader. And
but that's a tiny ecosystem. That's the problem.
Exactly.
It's expanding it.
What I'm saying is the moneyless system is nothing new. I mean, I've been using this system there for the last 4 years. Mm-hmm. So it's not a new idea. The getting rid of money principle is something that your government's wanted for a very long time. Hence the reason it started phasing out paper money, because it's too easy to duplicate where the coins aren't. And if Uncle Sam and Auntie Britannia know that you haven't got any cash in your pocket, there's no cash deals anymore, there's no deviation from taxation systems, they have got the finger on the pulse of every single penny in the economy at that point. So this is a massive desire for government. You hadn't thought that.
Yeah, it seems to me to be a massive desire for everyone but the actual paying consumers. I mean, I really have never used cash almost my whole life. I mean, I've paid credit card even for the smallest of transactions, slide it into vending machines, get a soda. I mean, to me, it seems like I've already been living in the world of moneyless payment and credit having those cards keep a record. And yet I still have a big fat wallet, because how do you not? You've got your driver's license. You've got, you do have to have cash for those times and places that don't accept that.
Your government doesn't want you to have cash, though.
I'm sorry, say it again?
Your government doesn't want you to have cash.
Now, why is that? You were saying harder to keep track of?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the age of the Big Brother process, I mean, that Big Brother process is really starting to impact here in the UK now. So if you look at taxation from Revenue and Customs, Revenue and Customs will sit down with you and say, right, you're claiming 20,000 miles business use on your car this year. And you say, yes, I absolutely am. Well, hang on, because I've got your motor operability test certificate from that your car's roadworthy, and there's last year's that I've got electronically from the vehicle licensing people, and it says you've done 20,000 miles, and here's the one for this year's, and it says you've done 24,000 miles. So how have you managed to do 20,000 business miles in these 4,000 that you've got between your MOT certificates? And you're looking at them going, I don't got you. And government has been trying for a very long time to get this idea of integrated computer systems. And the taxation bods at the moment are linked into every computer system that has got anything to do with money within any other government department. And they can data that will incriminate you in seconds. It's not this, we have to make a request and one's operating over here and we're over operating over there and the two of us are never talking to each other, which is the way that traditional government's always operated.
Well, sure, I can certainly see from that perspective why the government would want electronic payments. And yet I don't see the distinction. How does it help the government that the MasterCard transaction was facilitated by my phone and not my card or my keychain?
No,
because the idea of these transactions is for it to be smaller amounts. Because, you know, most card processing.
Not in this case.
Yeah, but this is what the MasterCard and the Visa systems were for. It's so it could be something that costs £1.50 can just be done very simply with a lesser transaction charge, as opposed to using a chip and pin reader like we have in this country. So it's about just facilitating a way to, instead of having a minimum amount like £5 or whatever for a transaction, is to have transactions of all kinds and it not be such a cumbersome transaction as well, you know, where we have to put a card and enter a PIN in. So you'd literally just tap a debit card which has one of these chips into the one of the readers. This has been around for about 3 or 4 years, but hasn't really taken off very well. And I think that's probably why we're getting NFC in other devices now. So it can be.
But the reason it hasn't taken off very well is because people don't want to use it. I really don't think people want to use it. There's a difference between taking your card, a separate piece of a sort of a token of your account with a bank, and applying it to something, and then just taking your phone or some other sort of generic thing, which you have even, I don't know, unless it flashes up on the screen how much is left in your account, I'm not really going to be particularly keen on doing it. The other thing I'd contest what Ewan was saying about the government knowing everything about it. If anybody's going to know about it, it's going to be the banks and it's going to be the supermarkets, who are going to know more about you than they do already, and that is already a hell of a lot.
Agreed. Sarah, are you going to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, one of the issues here is, I mean, I actually think this kind of thing is a great idea and I'm all for it. And part of the reason for that is because, I mean, I don't know how many times in particular it seems to happen in this country. If you try and use a credit card for a small transaction, and sometimes in a lot of other places, the retailers will charge you because they're having to pay a fee to the credit card company for that. So this kind of thing, actually, in theory, and I say in theory because we don't know whether what the associated costs for retailers are with this, should alleviate that problem. And you know you can understand if you know Eric was saying that he uses a credit card for virtually everything, which is great, and that's the whole principle of getting away from carrying cash around, which is great, and in an ideal world that'd be fantastic. But when the credit card companies are charging large fees to the retailers per transaction,
4%,
that kind of
goes
away from where we want to be with it. And this kind of thing hopefully helps us move more towards that for the smaller end of the market from a transaction point of view.
That may be a theme with other near field communication proposals, but I don't believe Google mentioned that at all. And in fact, they're not posing as an alternative to the credit card companies. They are actually, they've partnered with MasterCard, and eventually they will partner with the other card companies. And they are merely the
brokers
and the wallet maker that brings the MasterCard transaction to the merchant. You guys seem to be assuming that there's a reduced payment, or that it's eschews the usual credit card companies. It doesn't seem that to be that case at all.
So no, where's Google
there
making
is a reduced
the money
payment from, because it's a MasterCard system that already exists, which is called, I think it's called EasyPay, and Visa have one called PayWave or PayPass, MasterCard PayPass, and they do charge less for these types of transactions.
Sorry, Mike. But I just wanted to say that this is actually PayPass. It uses the exact same PayPass.
Yeah, I know. That's consoles. What I'm saying. Yeah, it does. It does use that. And that system is charged less to the retailer.
So the retailer benefits. But where does Google, like, it's a good point. Where does Google get their cut? And what on earth is in it for them? Do they get to see every transaction and therefore learn
offers.
More about the users?
It's offers. That's what they're going to make their money out of.
Advertising offers location data. Yeah. So your phone will tell you where you are. The phone will tell you where there's services available. Your Google shopping searches on your phone are going to come round with a Google map that says go here and you can pay here. And you'll get priority payment at this store, this store, this store, this store in the local area. And all of those this stores that Google are promoting will have paid a fee to be promoted by Google in the research.
Yeah, it's a selling point for Android devices.
That's kind of how I'd see it working from Google's point of view.
Yeah, and don't also
take note.
I was going to say, don't also forget that Google, if they're acting as a catchment purse, they're then taking a bulk of transactions back to the credit card supplier, who is going to give them a big reduction on the fact they're coming with a bulk of money rather than coming with small individual transactions.
Well Google actually makes no, they do not make a cut of the transactions, and they said that where they, the incentive for them to do this is the Google deals, and the fact that they can, for the first time, take their advertising network and their Google offers and follow the transaction all the way through from initial ad impression to the moment that you actually pay the cash. Well, not cash in this case, but you know.
Yeah. If you want to get to a system whereby you're going to get rid of cash within your society, you've got to have a replacement. And the idea of NFC has been around for years with lots and lots of different proprietary cards in closed environments, as you say, Eric. But the push has been towards taking that and putting it into global devices like phones. And I wouldn't be surprised if in 10 years' time we would say that there is no cash transactions anymore.
Oh, we've been saying that for decades, Ewan.
But I don't think technologically we've been actually quite close enough to actually follow through on it, have we?
I'm all for the elimination of cash and coin transactions. And there's hardly anything I've ever bought like that using cash. But I just don't see how having it as an app in your phone is that much of a benefit over having a card in your wallet or a card in your pocket or a card attached to your keychain. I don't think it eliminates pocket bulk, like they're saying.
It's one less card to carry, Eric.
Can you, though? I mean, can you really? How many years will it be? I mean, you can't really leave your house and get in your car and drive somewhere without a penny of cash on you, because you never know where you're going to land that doesn't take a credit card, doesn't take your card. How many years is it going to be, if ever, when we can just assume coverage that the phone can do it and they will won't have a problem accepting that?
Yeah, I see your point. And that's exactly that's what Ewan's saying. In 10 years time, is that going to be soon enough?
But this is my point, though, is that who is driving the rollout of the is it Google trying to get into the merchant and saying, put one of these readers on all your checkouts, because if we have them everywhere, your lives will be made simpler. Because actually, that can't really be done in small bites. It may be able to be done in a region, but they've tried it in cities, and then the pilots have just fizzled out. They'd have to roll it out across America, and they would have to spend a heck of a lot of money on it to be able to get it to the state where it reaches a tipping point. And once it's done that, the phones have to be fitted with these things. And there, I mean, if Android... Sorry, Ewan?
It won't be a single action, though. You're not talking about, right, everyone stops using cash on Monday and they're going to start using near-field communications on Tuesday.
But for people to have adequate take-up, people have got to be able to go to all their regular stores and know that it's there, because otherwise they'll have to chop and change.
But that's the key point, is the fact that the limitation prior to this was the fact that you had to have a card for everything that you wanted to do for every store type that you had. You know, you've been able to stock up a store card with NFC for years. My local golf club has got NFC payments, but it's a separate card from the one that I get at the other company. The move towards the technology is the fact that you've got your phone with you all the time, and once they've cracked the idea of the fact that you can have separated card payments on the same phone, so you go through your application, you select golf club, company X, Visa card, and you go through these things and it debits it automatically from a notional stock value that's there through a prepayment system. And then when they've got past the idea of the fact that what do you do if your phone battery runs out and you want to pay for something? Once they've got through that element, the doors are open, the floodgates are open for the removal of hard currency.
So you don't think it's going to be a single ecosystem then?
No, I don't think for one second.
Or a small number of ecosystems, because as soon as it starts, that becomes really complicated, because that's like having different parts of your wallet with different types of money in it. And actually, that's more of a... You've got to keep that in your head then. That's really hard for me. No. I'd find it difficult to do. If I've got change in my pocket, I know how much I've got and I can use it on certain things. So I have to charge this card and this card, this account and this account. It's just going to be too much.
No, what you're going to end up with is you've got different cards in your wallet. So what you'll end up with is that there'll be a Wild West problem here where everyone goes off and everyone's got an NFC payment system. And then slowly people will come along and rationalize those NFC payment systems into clubs. So exactly what you've got with airlines now, where you had a fragmented airline process, they've all clubbed together and you've got Star Alliance, those kind of people, and you're getting interrelated deals. So you debit one, you debit all.
I can't see what it's in it for the customer, to be honest, just yet.
I don't.
It's not customer driven.
You're right. It's not customer driven. It's driven by the people who want a new model. Like maybe not necessarily Google if they're not taking a cut. I admit the reporting on this subject is kind of bad. I've looked at a number of articles, and none of them seem to spell out what exactly is in this for Google, what their motivation is, what they hope to gain from this. Hopefully, some people will write some better articles about this, because it's really kind of sad how I guess, reporting as come. I guess I'm going to have to watch the source video myself. But, you know, I'm not a fan of these customer cards, store cards, rewards cards. You know, everyone wants you to have a rewards card and to track your buying and everything. And they're like, oh, you get to save money. Well, of course you don't, because that's not the reason they make and implement
Absolutely.
Cards like that. I've got right here, I got a CVS card that before we were recording this, I went to CVS because I had a coupon that printed out a few days ago that said, if you come back in the next 3 days, you'll save $5 off a $15 purchase. And I thought, well, there's stuff I need. And but you know, I didn't want to have to go back there. I wouldn't have if it weren't for that coupon and this card. And I probably wouldn't have bought the things that I bought, I realized after the fact, at that full price to get that savings. You know, whether you buy something on sale or whether you buy it as part of a different bundle that they trick you into buying it with things at full price, it always comes back to benefit the store and not the customer. So the only reason we're using this is because of the Google offers and the tremendous savings it'll give you. That always comes back to benefit the seller more than the buyer.
Yeah, because they can afford to give those discounts because of the value they're going to get from the information.
Is this Google doing their not really understanding people thing again?
Well, no, I think it depends on your own personal taste. I think it's great. I'd love to get rid of cash. I can't stand carrying cash around. I only ever have cash if I have to have it. I never have cash in my wallet. I prefer cards. So for me, having an NFC payment system in my phone would be great. I'd love it. It's a personal preference, I think.
Your government loves it because there's no cash deals anymore. There's no, I'll do it for 200 quid for cash instead of 300 if I've got to give you a VAT receipt. So instantly your VAT collection goes up because it's all accountable and trackable. They turn up and do an inspection on you and they know everything before they even start the inspection with you. The inspection's pointless.
My point, though, is...
It's not customer-driven.
If you had an NFC payment thing, how many shops would you need to be able to pay, use it to pay before you'd actually think, yes, this is a good idea? How many of you, the regular... how many shops do you go to a week? And would they all have to have it for you to find it useful?
Yeah, but it's like when they rolled out chip and PIN. I mean, if it just becomes this is how it's done, then it will just be an add-on to chip and PIN services, and it will just be the way.
I mean, like chip and PIN. That's the point. That chip and PIN was instigated by the banks, and the banks stuck all the equipment in at probably a massive cost to the banks.
Hmm.
By the way,
this is Google. This is Google has got no, you know, what's Google going to do?
Well, Google's partnered with MasterCard.
Just finish off your point, Mark. Go ahead.
I was just saying that that Google will partner with MasterCard to provide the terminals. So MasterCard will continue to provide the terminals. And they said that in America at the moment, they've got 300,000 retail locations where Google Wallet will be able to be used.
That's a big start.
Yeah.
Eric, what was your point?
Well, actually, in regards to that, you know, before you can leave without it, before you can remove that extra, you know, micrometer of an inch of thickness out of your wallet, it has to be completely ubiquitous. That's why I still care. You know, like, the cash is what uses the space in my wallet and in my pocket. It's not the one or two cards. But what I was going to say was that I still don't see where you guys are saying that this is a step, that NFC payments with a phone is a step towards eliminating cash any more than credit cards have been, or credit cards that have NFC in them.
It's not just the phone; it's the actual technology. Whether you put it in an existing card or a phone or based inside a wallet, it's just the ubiquity of NFC payments. That's what removes cash, not just Google's announcement. But this is just another step.
And we're talking about the difference you're saying is the difference between tapping and swiping?
See, yeah, but we're looking at it very differently in the UK because we don't do the swiping system. It's a different system of payment here where we have to put our card into a reader and put our PIN in. So it just allows the transaction to be much faster. And as I said before, it is a cheaper to the retailer as well.
And in theory, it's more secure, which is the main reason why the banks have done it.
I would say the other thing is that I don't think I've been to a chocolate bar machine or a Coca-Cola machine or whatever and been able to use a card in it. It's always been cash only in the UK, really, yeah, because I don't think they can.
And in the US too.
Yeah.
Well, the reason for that, in addition to having to, you know, bring in totally brand new vending machines, is that you know, what's expensive is not the difference between something that reads an NFC signal and reads the barcode on a swiped credit card. It's building in that payment system that is constantly connected to the internet, or via phone line to the card company that can call and verify and have some kind of security mechanism. Because if all you're doing is tapping and there's no additional security mechanism, that's not secure. I mean, I wonder what happened to, you see in all those movies about the future, people walk up and they scan their thumbprint. That seems a lot more secure to me. If the credit card company knows who you are and they've got all this information about you, why bring your phone into the mix? Just say, that's the person, charge them.
Actually, that's interesting because under my desk, I've got my thumb taped on the underside of my desk and I find it very secure.
I was going to actually say that, actually, this isn't going to work until IPv6 comes along then, really.
Well, nothing's going to work until IPv6 comes along.
Because they're not going to have enough IP addresses to be able to put these terminals in place.
It depends whether they're source linked or whether they're...
behind a NAT router.
Behind a router, yeah.
Yeah.
What, you mean have a router behind every soft drink machine?
Well, most of them have already...
For the larger building. I wanted to clarify also, in the United States, we certainly do it that way. It's not, you don't just swipe it, you swipe it and then you enter your zip code, or you have to sign a piece of paper or sign the machine. Yeah. And in fact, in one instance of just horribly vague reporting, these are the tops, I'm looking at CNUM, I'm looking at GigaOM, Ars Technica, they're not writing this. One random stray sentence in one of those articles said that it doesn't make a charge unless a PIN code is entered. Now, it doesn't say if that happens every time or if that's a one-time thing to enable the app permanently. I don't know how they can gloss over a detail like that, but it may actually involve the typing of a PIN number into your phone, which seems to me to be no different than typing it into the merchant's console. And also, in the demo that Google showed in their video or their on-stage demonstration, supposedly, they showed a person still having to pick up one of those stylus pens and sign their digital signature on the screen, which again seems
holy crap.
What kind of progress is that?
No, I mean,
I've seen, they're saying that your phone had to be unlocked for the transaction to go through, hence why they're saying about a pin. So if you wanted to pin protect your phone, you'd have to unlock the phone screen like you do on an iPhone or a Android phone at the moment before it would accept the NFC payment, if you so chose to have that level of security.
So it does actually give you some protection
if you want it.
Yeah,
but it just protects you from theft.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
I mean I always thought that this was only ever meant to be for low value transactions anyway.
Well, now, this is the interesting point. Let's go back to a statement that you made earlier on, Eric. You said you've used a credit card to buy a soda out of a vending machine. So, I mean, yes. You're talking about a $2 purchase price there.
Yes, and I meant to say that as well, that, you know, when you're talking about why don't we see more vending machines with credit card transactions, yeah, I mean, a lot of that, and that's why you still get some, you know, small mom-and-pop restaurants or mom-and-pop little stores say, you know, we don't take credit card unless the order is over 10, 15 bucks or something. It's because, you know, if you're not a giant chain or a giant store and can negotiate these smaller fees, it can be very expensive. It can really add up.
It's not just that, because there's a minimum charge, isn't there? That's the trouble. That's why they do the $5, $10 thing, because there's a minimum charge from the credit card company. And then at the point that becomes over the percentage value, they then go on percentage of total value. So you'll pay regardless of the amount that you buy, you'll pay a minimum of a dollar, or you'll pay a minimum of 75 cents. And then after that, you'll be paying a percentage.
Exactly. And I don't see any evidence from this announcement that the goal or result is to lower that cost, especially since it's fulfilled by MasterCard and Citibank.
No way. There's no way they're going to reduce that cost. Shame it is to admit it, because I think these sort of costs are what's prohibiting the real rollout of
no, be careful know, here though, because you're not talking about, I mean, this is where there's a culture divide perhaps, Eric, for you as well, is bear in mind you're not probably talking about credit cards. What you're actually talking about is debit cards. Now, do you guys use debit cards very much over there, Eric?
No.
Okay, now there's a huge culture change here between the two of us then, because in the UK, debit cards are enormous. They carry no charges because they're being debited directly from your bank account. You're not going through a credit lending service, which then has a handling charge on top of that, which is what we're talking about. So in the UK, we've got a massive debit system, which would lend itself very well to NFC.
That's interesting. Yeah. Here, I the way I've always understood it is that the only reason people use a debit card is if they have a bad credit or just for some reason prefer to take it directly. I actually do know someone, I guess, who has perfectly fine credit, but he prefers to have transactions taken from his account immediately so he keeps track of his finances better. I don't do that, and most people don't. But in fact, here, our debit cards are handled by MasterCard, Visa, the same credit card companies, and they issue credit cards that, with the only exception being that instead of entering your 6-digit zip code for verification, you enter your 4-to-6-digit bank PIN number.
That's
other
right.
than that, it functions identically. And I would imagine that they charge a similar transaction fee being the same Visa or MasterCard fulfillment system.
Well, this is where the difference comes, because your card is issued by your bank under license from MasterCard or Visa. So if you're with Barclays, they're in bed with Visa. And I think if you're with Lloyds, they're in bed with MasterCard. So you'll have the Visa symbol and you'll have the MasterCard symbol on the corner of your debit card, and they'll be handling the transaction, but because it's being debited direct from your bank is not charging you a handling fee on that. It's just a straightforward charge. And that is, I would say that is 99% of currency transactions here in the UK, guys, do you reckon? I mean, the checkbook is banned in most places.
It's being phased out, and a lot of retailers won't take them now. Yeah,
you won't get a checkbook you won't get a check accepted in a commercial establishment anywhere. Takeaways don't take them anymore. Restaurants don't take them. Gas stations don't take them. There's nothing. No one. You. The only people that you can give a check to at the moment is pretty much Inland Revenue, and even they're trying to get rid of that.
In 2012, they're gone. Checkbooks are gone.
Gone entirely. So the only thing we've got left then is credit cards and debit cards. And if you're talking about access to your active funds, your capital funds that you physically own yourself, you've got to go to the bank and you've got to go to a process system that's debit cards. So that now makes up 99% of transactions.
There is that third way, isn't there, that you can charge up another piece of equipment, like going into a cash point and taking out cash.
Yeah.
But that third piece of equipment that does things. It's interesting to hear the juxtaposition of what we're talking about, Visa and MasterCard and credit cards and debit cards, when the chat room seems to be completely obsessed with thumbs.
Yes.
Now, if I can get my thumb authorized by Visa, then I think I'll be on a winner.
What happened to retina scanning or fingerprint scanning? I mean, if they know who you are, then you can, at that point, select any card you want or any credit system, and you got your payment.
See, I do that at another company. You know, if I want to get into this company, I have a card pass system, and I have to pass my card in front of the reader, and then I have to put my index finger on the scanner, and the scanner scans me, and it opens the door to let me in.
I think your worry, though, is, and this is a genuine worry, your theft becomes a lot more grim. If somebody wants to steal your money, they cut your thumb off.
But if you think about it, the theft of a credit card or a phone is so much easier, and people call and cancel those things right away. I would imagine you can call and cancel your thumb just as quickly.
Very difficult to pick the phone up.
But you know, your problem is, I mean,
you can imagine that call.
And we laugh. Theft will never stop, but people will always be desperate. And if it gets to that point, people will start cutting hands off.
You know what else you can do? Heat sensors. If it doesn't sense a pulse, it doesn't scan.
That's horrible.
I've just got this thing in here. There's someone on the phone. Hello? Yeah, I'd like to report my thumb's missing. When was the last time you had your thumb?
We'll send you a replacement out right away, sir.
I'm not sure. I may have left it in the bathroom. But, is your thumb in your possession? Well, I don't think I've lost it. I just think I can't find it.
Hello, Mr. Jones. Your thumb's been reported being used in Singapore.
How are you in Singapore, Mr. Jones?
No, but my thumb is.
Oh, then you could have detachable thumbs for credit transactions, couldn't you?
Yes.
Like little rubber thumbs that go on over them, and then you can spoof like that.
There we go.
Take a thumbprint of someone and spoof the thumbprint. Well, that's why what you need is facial recognition, because it's a lot harder to steal a face.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you start talking about retina, then it gets even more gruesome.
You see someone holding up a severed head and it scans, and they go through.
And that's the guy behind the bars going, "Are you sure that's your severed head, sir? Have you taken that from someone else? I think that severed head's stolen." Oh no, someone's put in the chat room. Tyson has said, "Don't forget the USB drive or thumb drive."
There you go.
It's a Blade Runner moment. So we've got The Severed Thumb as the title so far. So come on, chat, I'm assuming you can better that one. Right, so Google NFC payments done. Amazon Mac download store. We're going to talk about this tomorrow a little bit more on the Mac show, perhaps. But, I mean, from a viewpoint, is there any thought process of how this links in with the Mac malware thing that's been going on this week? Because, of course, there's been a bit of a fast-paced development on this, not having been happy last week with just having the Mac malware issue with Mac Defender. We've now got the fact that that has now transmuted itself to the point that it no longer requires an admin password to start the installation process. So it probably won't be that long before it installs without authority. From a click from that point onwards. A quick question, Eric, have you installed the Sophos antivirus yet?
Nope.
You dinosaur.
But you know who's going to protect me? Apple's software update. They're going to build in Mac Defender specific protection right in the software update, just like I said they should last week. So
hang on a second, because there's actually a story that was is about an hour old that I quickly saw this evening, which says that the patch has already been beaten. The proposed patch from Apple has already been beaten.
And it's fine. How they would know that?
Well, the way that it's been described that it's going to work, I can't remember where I saw it now, but it was something about it's already been beaten. I'll have a look while we talk about it. So Amazon's Mac download store, you've got another outlet here for getting your Mac software, which has got to be good because we need a competition process, definitely. We don't want to see Apple dealing with it all directly anyway.
That said, I've not. Amazon's got an Android store, haven't they? Yep.
Yes.
I haven't bothered using it because I've got an Android store on my Android phone and it works.
Isn't the Amazon Android store US only?
Yeah, it is. I was going to say, you wouldn't be able to. I've already tried to use it, James.
But if I were to use it, what would be? It'd just be cheaper apps, I guess.
They have exclusives. Right. So, for example, Plants and Zombies. Plants vs. Zombies is going to be exclusive. And they also offer a paid app for free every day. And apparently they're quite good quality apps.
On Android?
On Android. So you can go into the Android App Store and download. They offer an app every day that will be free.
And they have a cool emulator that hasn't launched yet, but will eventually allow you to test out every Android app, point and click and demo it right there in your desktop browser. And in theory, you might get more security because it's tightly curated like the Apple Store. Although in its current implementation, you have to disable the biggest security feature your Android phone has, which is to only allow software from the Android market. And so by sideloading the Amazon App Store, you remove that feature. But I hope Google allows them to have the same control. I've mentioned this before, but you know, Amazon also can't remotely kill malicious or rogue apps like Google can or like Apple can. So there are some downsides to it, but I hope that gets fixed.
Mm.
So basically what I would say is, I mean, what you said there, Mike, I'm pretty much sold. Yeah, I'll take, when it comes to the UK, which isn't probably never, I'm pretty sold onto it. And I will take a look at the Amazon store. What do you reckon it will do for the Mac users? Will they be able to do the same sort of things?
Yeah, because it's US only as well.
Yeah, well, they offer the same incitements.
I think that the key that what Amazon is saying is so great at the moment is that they've got apps that the Mac App Store doesn't have, like Office is in the Amazon download store for Mac. And that's because they allow the software vendor to make up their own licensing rules. Like, for example, Office, you get free installs instead of five. So I think that they may win in the short term for that, because it's whether these companies want to give in to Apple's rules or get to just do whatever they like in Amazon store instead.
Amazon have never really been they've always been known for being able to strike a really hard deal, though, so I think they might be between the devil and the deep blue sea on that one.
Have we got the 70-30 split still on this, does anyone know?
I reckon it will just be the same cut that it takes for box software. Yeah. Whatever that is. So
I'm totally new to this. I missed it when it came out a few hours ago.
Yeah, no. There's not a great deal of detail on it, to be fair, as well, though, Eric. The stories are all pretty brief about the fact that it's just been launched and just been announced. I'm just clicking on the Apple Insider story here.
There's like a couple of hundred apps and about 50-odd games or something, and it's effectively just stuff you would buy on Amazon and have it shipped to your house. You can just download it straight from them. So it's just Mac apps,
It's a completely natural thing for Amazon to want to do. It's their core business, and they do it very well. So I imagine it's no surprise, and they've got to keep growing. I mean, every Google can come out with new technology the whole time, unless Amazon comes out with something completely brand new, they've got to keep on pursuing these extra routes to market.
I think what's interesting though for them as a hurdle to the success of this, a number of apps is clearly the first one, which Mike's kind of touched on there, but also the seamless nature of the Mac App Store is something that I think people will balk at, because, you know, it's like anything, when you give something away free, you then can't start charging for it. Well, I'm not saying that the stuff being given away free in the Mac App Store and that's what's holding them in. What I'm saying is you click on the Mac App Store, you buy it, and you know that all of your authorized computers can have a version of that software. Well, with what's going on with the Amazon stuff, it's going to let the devs say what they want to give out as license, and an awful lot of devs are going to go single user license straight away. And then you haven't got that scene. You know, I've got Mac software, and unless they've got Mac software that you cannot buy from the Mac App Store, this is doomed to failure before it even starts, I think. No?
I think that's a good point. I'll have to, I'm eager to see the details as they come out about how they're compensating developers and what they allow developers to, what kind of rules they allow developers to set. But I think you're exactly right, Ewan. If most developers go in and say, oh, only one installation or only three, you know, if they go in and make it a less desirable offering than buying either a CD or buying the Apple branded download, which also gives users the peace of mind of knowing that it's been vetted by the same maker of their hardware and operating system, then I think, yeah, it could be doomed to failure.
But there is a counterpoint to that as well, Eric, which is, why do Amazon care? Because Amazon make the money whether they sell it, and they don't make any money if they don't sell it, but it doesn't cost them anything if they don't sell it.
That's the real genius thing about it, is because Amazon don't really need to put much infrastructure in place to be able to just get this rolling out. It's really easy for them to have done.
See, I think there's the one thing that you've got here with Apple, and it's a good point for Apple, is that there's an investment in customer service and care goes along with that, in the walled garden, the safety and security, the lack of virus, the ease of install, because it's a click and the little icon just drifts down and goes into your dock and starts installing. And the fact that, you know, you get yourself a piece of software like iStop Motion I bought the other week at £40, and all of a sudden I've got five licenses for a £40 piece of software. Well, that's unheard of before. Now, if you're then saying that I've got to go to Amazon and I'm not going to get me five licenses for £40, if I'm buying two pieces of software, there's no question I ain't going to Amazon. Not in a million years. It's going to have to be unique software in Amazon. And they're not doing that.
It can't not be. Because if you start duplicating software, you start having to duplicate the updates. The developers are going to have a bitch of a time having to update all the different repositories for their files.
Well, my next question as well is, if they go to single user license, I mean, one of the things that's exampled here in the Apple Insider article is Roxio Toast 10. Now, I mean, I can go to the Roxio website and get Toast as a single user license, probably for exactly the same fee as I'm going to get it with Amazon. Roxio are going to get more of the money, so I feel better about that for a start off. But also, if I've bought it from Roxio, I feel as though I've got a better customer service path there than having to go back to Amazon. Amazon saying, not our problem. And you've got the old OEM kind of split issue between the vendor and the manufacturer going on as well there. Whereas Apple, I go there, I buy it, it's the same manufacturer. It's, you know, there is a continuity in customer service within Apple's provision. And I think that's going to play a huge factor as well. I think Amazon have got to be really careful if they want this to be a success, because it could be a real flop. No?
I think I agree with James when he pointed out that the reason they're doing this is they think it's inevitable, just as Netflix found the moves from physical DVDs to streaming inevitable, and Apple did as well. And you can also look at it and say Amazon sees pressure not just from the downloads from Apple, but they just see the market in general moving to downloads, and they have the infrastructure, they have the cloud storage, they have all the payment infrastructure and processing. All they really need to add is the ability to work with the developers on their terms of the DRM, and it'll be interesting to see as the details emerge what kind of DRM system there is, if they have a storefront app, how the DRM is phoning home and verifying itself and activating and so forth, and what those conditions are. How you might,
and in that respect, they've been really clever by getting a march on all the other software distributors who are still selling hard copies of stuff. So, yeah, pretty clever, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think. James, you made an interesting point in the chat room, along with a few of the other chat roomers, saying about updates as well. You know, Apple Store's automatic updates, and it sits there waiting for you to say yes, please install. You know, it'd be interesting to see how Amazon deal with that kind of process as well, because none of that's been outlined in the promotional material that's been sent out.
Amazon very rarely needs to update an MP3. Sorry, beg your pardon.
All it's doing is just giving you somewhere to buy the software from. It's not a store like what Apple are doing. So all you do is you just download it and then you just check for updates as normal, as if you'd installed it off of a disk.
Yeah, I mean, there's an interesting thing in that, you know, if you look at the list of software that are on offer, there's a few of those are currently available in the Mac App Store. Well, I ain't going to buy it from Amazon if it's in the Mac App Store, rule one. Rule two is, if I can get it from the developer and from the Amazon store, I ain't going to get it from anyone else but the developer. So, I mean, if you're saying about exclusivity deals with Amazon for Android stuff, I think if you look at this, there's going to have to be something from Android that says, you know, you have to sell. If you offer this for sale, we want an exclusivity within this license, and you can't sell it even from your own website without going through us. So you can have a link to the sale in Amazon store, but you can't have a free download, or you can't have a sale and download from your own site and take full fees, because otherwise we don't get a cut. Because, I mean, like I said, if I've got a developer's site, I'll go and get it there ahead of Amazon. If I've got in the Mac App Store, I'm going to go there ahead of Amazon. So where does Amazon have, where's the pulling power from Amazon from me? Before exactly. me? I think so. I think it's one of those things that everyone's going to go, wow. And they're going to look at it, and it's good to have competition for Apple, like we started off with there. But I think in the analysis and in the success of it, it could be that there could be a lot of devil in the detail. Perhaps.
Do they have one for Windows?
Not yet.
No.
I thought that they did. It was.
Yeah, it's a scalability issue, isn't it? I mean, they can just as easily do it for Apple, for Android, for Windows, whatever. You know, it doesn't actually matter. It's just a scalability issue from an Amazon point of view, isn't it?
Yeah, they've had the Windows one for a while, I think.
There is a Windows one.
There you go.
Ah. Huh.
Is that America only?
I'm not sure. Let me see.
Then again, Amazon isn't my first place to look for Microsoft software, for Windows software, oddly.
Well, I'd check them out for a price comparison, maybe, perhaps, or something, but...
Yeah, it is US only.
Yeah. I mean, I've just gone on the front page, and I'm looking for download software.
If you just go to shop or departments... On the main page, on Amazon.com's main page, it says digital games and software, and then software downloads will take you to the respective pages.
I've got a question for you guys, because I know that Ewan and I think James also, you guys are very concerned about companies that have the ability to restrict competition. What do you guys think of this predatory pricing from Amazon on a lot of things? I mean, they give Android apps away for free. They sell $12 albums for 99 cents. The book publishers stepped in and said, no, we don't want you selling them for $3 when we're selling them for $20 in stores. What do you think of that? And what do you think of how this might give Amazon even greater power? The more they undercut the other stores, that just it's Amazon throwing their massive weight around.
Culturally, we're used to it in the UK. We've got something called Tesco, which does a very similar thing, and other supermarkets are available.
Yeah.
They again drive really hard bargains for their suppliers and undercut each other massively. There was a point, I think, where you could buy a tin of beans and they'd give you money for it.
I think
because here's what I thought of. You know, James, you had said that Amazon is not your place to look for Microsoft software, and it occurred to me, Amazon is the only place I look for Microsoft software. Like when I've had to buy copies of Windows or tell someone else where to go to get them, or to buy pretty much any software that's not a direct download, Amazon is always the cheapest. Same with any kind of hardware. I mean, I can count on one hand the number of purchases I've made in the last 2 years where Amazon was not the lowest price.
High, sell it cheap.
Adobe Photoshop Elements, for example, is a great one. There's no question that if I wanted a copy of Elements 9, I wouldn't look anywhere else but Amazon.
Wow.
I agree.
I think it's a case of, you know, they're a site, and I mean, I've bought a huge amount of stuff from Amazon, software, hardware, and so on and so forth, but it's not the cheapest every single time.
No.
Oh, for me it is. I mean, just even, I mean, books, there's nowhere else I would look.
I mean, this very microphone that I bought a month or two ago, I found somewhere that was quite a bit cheaper than elsewhere than Amazon. Amazon weren't the cheapest, so I didn't buy it through Amazon.
So it may be a United States thing, or a shipping thing, or a taxes thing. I bought almost everything I've ever bought.
Yeah, your sales tax is different, whereas Amazon charge VAT here in the UK the same as every other retailer would have to. So you would get breaks on sales tax, whereas we don't.
But it's interesting, you sling something like Amazon Prime into the equation, and delivery costs becomes of a secondary issue. You know, you don't have to add anything on to get stuff delivered the next day, which is, I mean, Amazon have done they've been really clever. It's as simple as that. They've kind of, they've come up with some creative ways to tweak the buying system to make it unique to them, to make it A, terrifyingly easy for people to buy stuff with one click, and B, easy for people to get stuff they want, the crap they want, delivered the next day.
I think they've listened to their customer base as well. That's one of the key parts of this. Absolutely.
I mean, you've only got to see the impact they've had on bookshops in the UK.
Going back to your original point there, Eric, we do have case history in the UK here that it's not legal to deliberately make a loss for the purposes of driving customers away from other businesses. We had a huge issue with bus privatisation, so all of the city buses in the local areas around the country were run by the local town authorities. They were businesses for the town authorities. Those still remained part of the business town authorities, but it was opened up so John's coaches could suddenly start up and could run the same route as the council buses did and charge a fee that they then chose themselves. And a lot of the council bus systems then started undercutting, and they would charge go anywhere for 2 pence. And John's coaches took, I think it was West Midlands Transport, the one that's local here, they took them to court, and there was a ruling in the High Court that you could not abuse your position within the market that had just been opened up as free to drive competitors out of business by undercutting your basic cost. You could sell it for a 1 penny profit and not care, but you could not sell it at a deliberate loss to drive another company out of business.
Yeah, so what do they make of, for instance, the new Lady Gaga album, which I was telling earlier everyone in the US should go out and buy today, because they did it again today. Because the servers crashed before. I'm never going to listen to the thing, but for 99 cents, it gives you 20 gigabytes of their free cloud storage service instead of the normal free 5. So it saves you $20 of what it would normally cost for the next year for spending 99 cents. But even let's suppose you really wanted the new Lady Gaga album, which millions of people do. 99 cents when every other store everywhere, including Apple, are selling it for $12 or more. You know, how do they look at that type of thing?
I noticed in the chat room
we don't have that offer.
So go on.
We haven't got that offer. It's $4.49 here still.
I noticed in the chat room though that they were saying if you sign up for this, then you can sign up for 20 gigabytes of Amazon space thrown in for free, because as soon as you buy something on the digital downloads, they give you that. So that's just mad. That's just like, yeah, it is a little bit unfair, because they're just like giving stuff away, really, aren't they?
Which is kind of silly when I've just renewed my Apple Mobile Me account for £60 and got 20 gigs worth of storage that I never use anyway. It's all taken up with mail. So, and I can't get that back now either. There's a long story. And they wrote to me last night, and they wrote to the bloke who they CC'd on the first email saying, do you know who this bloke Ewan Rankin is? Because I can't work out now. So I wrote back to him and said, how dare you divulge my identity to a third party?
Good grief.
You'll be hearing from my solicitor. Right. Good discussions all. Very good. Have we got any cool thingies? James, we got to start us off.
Have we done Minecraft yet?
I'm not aware that we have, no.
Minecraft is basically, it's Lego except on the computer. And my son is absolutely mad about it. Minecraft.com. And it's finally come out of beta. And it's brilliant fun, because it's you can multiplayer, and it's like you build yourself houses and things like that, but it's massively simmed. It's very difficult to describe. Minecraft.com, I think it is, but it's got cult status among sort of people who like non sort of Minecraft.net and building things and non sort of violent, not non confrontational stuff. And I think it's really great. And it's cute. It's funny. So many plugins and mods for it, and it's and you can build stuff. It's all Java based, so it's really easy to build for yourself. So it's I'd recommend it. It's like £15 or something for the paid version, but there's a free version you can play with.
Someone on This Week in Tech recently was describing how on in the Minecraft world, someone had built this elaborate like multi-acre wheat harvesting machine that because of the elaborate or because of the realistic physics engines and physics modeling in the game could actually be built in the real world if you were insane enough to do it. But they were saying this guy must have just poured, you know, 40 hours a day into this, or you know, 24 hours a day into this working on it. Just massive amount of work for just I hope he had fun doing it. But so is that the idea, James, that it's like it's very real world unless you build things that could be actually real because it's realistic?
It's kind of that, but it's also very macro. So it's like it's lumps of things you can put together to build things, and therefore it's formulaic. It's very, I don't know, it's really difficult to describe. Yes, you can build these elaborate constructions, and you can build amazing landscapes, and you can you can even automate them as well. So it's very difficult to describe. If you go to Minecraft.net, it's also very addictive, but it's addictive in a better way than Farmville was, I think, just about.
And probably in a more productive way.
Well, you're still not making anything, but I imagine it's, what I'm hoping is doing is giving my son an opportunity to build stuff, to be able to realize stuff from his imagination without leaving stuff on the floor, so I win.
So is this one of those crappy systems where if he gets hold of your credit card number, he can buy inordinate numbers of bricks?
No. The clever thing is, there's merch everywhere, you know. But the merch you can buy is fairly limited. It's all about the building and it's all about the fun, really. So good. It's not like that yet.
And the merch is probably things that other users have built, right? It's not like selling you cheats.
It's t-shirts and things. The plugins you can buy, the plugins you can get, I believe, but don't quote me on this, it's kind of either open source or simple developer source. You can just contribute your own plugins and things like that. So it's real. And I think at the moment the ecosystem is working and is free.
Good. We like free.
Yeah. Oh, I like free.
Mike, do you got anything for us?
Yeah, I've got an iOS game. I do love my iOS games. It's called House of Mice.
You've written a review on it, haven't you, just recently?
I have, yeah, at MacChasm, which is a great Apple news site that I sometimes write iOS reviews for.
Good.
It's like sort of, if you've ever played a game called Cut the Rope, it's quite similar to that in a way.
Love that.
You've got about 80 levels to play through. You play as a mouse. You have three mice that you have to fire to collect a bunch of cheese and then to destroy a smiling Cheshire cat right at the end of the level. There's loads of different obstacles that you have to face, and it's quite geometry based. You have to choose the angles at which you're going to fire the mice at. It's not gravity based like Cut the Rope. It's sort of the opposite of, so if you're coming from the bottom up rather than from the top down. For 59p 99 cents for 80 levels, it's a great looking game. It's well worth a download.
Did you say 80 levels for 59p?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Whoa.
I feel so sorry for these developers. They put that amount of work into it and charge such a small amount.
They do get to pick their own price, mate. Steady on.
Yeah, no, a game like this, you would feel that I'm sure they feel like they have to price it that way. It's just the only way that they feel that people would touch it. Because if they put it at a price of a fiver, which is probably worth, they're not going to get as many downloads as they were if they put it for a buck.
Stack it high, sell it cheap. The Lidl method of app sales.
Agreed.
Good one. Thank you very much, mate. Very, very good. Sarah, what have you got for us?
Yes, I've got... mine's a product that's actually not been released yet, but I've had a chance to have a play with it. It's the new Galaxy Tab 10.1. I had a chance to play with one while I was in the States and absolutely thought it was brilliant. So, yes, I think when it comes out in the UK, I know it's coming out in the States on the 6th of June. When it comes out in the UK, and I know it's going to be on Vodafone, then I may well be getting one. Because I really like the look of it running. It's supposed to be running new Honeycomb. I'll be quite happy if it runs Gingerbread, but it seems, from what I've seen, as if it's running Honeycomb.
So, I mean, one of the things that I hated about the Samsung 7-inch when I had a go with it is the fact that, it never felt like you were connected to it. Everything on the screen was not responsive. If you had something where you had to guide something on the screen as part of an application or a game, it never felt like the cursor movement and things like that. It never felt like it was adequate. Are you saying that this one's got that?
Well, certainly. I mean, my experience, main experience of using Android is comparing it to my Nexus S. And it was perfectly, it was as good as that. And the other thing was it was considerably thinner.
I'm assuming Nexus S is pretty good anyway, though.
Yeah, it is.
Sorry.
So maybe I've been spoiled by that experience. But I was still impressed. It was the first time I've actually played with, because I've played with a few other Android tablets while I was over there that are out in a few of the stores. But this one, I just thought, yeah, this could be the one that I end up buying.
Excellent, excellent. Eric, what have you got for us, mate?
Well, do you remember earlier I mentioned that I was at CVS before this show with my CVS card? CVS, if you're not familiar, it's like a Walgreens, you know, it's a giant pharmacy chain that, you know, destroyed all the little ones around the country. And sometimes they have some good deals. And so let me show you what I was buying. These are Reese's Minis in a little bag. They are unwrapped Reese's peanut butter cups, and you can see right here the size. They're these little tiny ones, and the reason these are better, in addition to not having to unwrap them, which you know, for people like me who have to have a bit of weight to lose, it's that might be a bad thing. But the peanut butter inside is so much better, because I don't know what causes this, but if you get, sometimes you get a Reese's, or a lot of times, and it's all dried out in the peanut butter, and only like at Christmas time when it's like cold and there's no humidity and they never get hot is when you get like the perfect Reese's, where the moisture, the oily goo, is in the peanut butter instead of on the slimy surface of the peanut butter cup. So these somehow manage to keep the peanut butter nice and gooey and sweet, and as a result, let me show you what you
have. You got like a Reese's humidor or something?
He's on a sugar high.
Let's see, this is what I got. Two for $5, normally close to $6 a piece. Here's one, two, three, four, five.
You won't want your tea.
Six, seven, eight, nine, and the tenth is open. So that's my cool thingy.
I'm guessing by the agitation you've just displayed, mate, the tent's nearly all gone.
Yeah, thinking that.
So your tech,
oh, yeah, he's hyper.
Your technology pick of the week was a chocolate bar.
Oh. Well, no, I didn't know that was. Well, I was going to mention, I forgot that these were actually released at CES. Believe it or not. So that is the connection, and I completely forgot that.
What? How can you release
Consumer
a candy
electronics
bar?
Electronics show.
Yeah, but how can you release a candy bar at CES? Well, I know you can, because they obviously have, but I mean, it just doesn't seem like the place to do it. Unless, well,
you
know, there's
a geek thing.
You have
to imagine the technology that went into designing a Reese's peanut butter cup that was 75% the size of normal ones. That is not an easy feat.
The chat room saying, no wonder he was running around at the start of the show. And Alex is saying, has he checked the sell by date on those?
Do you know why they taste a little bit different?
No.
That's probably because they're off. No, I wouldn't suggest such a thing. It's got something to do with the volume to surface area of the container, probably, isn't it?
Must have. I think so. I think this the chocolate here is
it's optimal.
It's thicker, I think. It feels thicker.
We're not analysing a peanut butter cup on this show. we're bad enough as it is.
By the way, expiration date is 2015, so I think I'm fine.
Yeah, nothing dies inside a Reese's peanut butter cup. Nothing lives,
these
rather.
These are rock solid. These things are radiation proof.
Are they called mini cups or something like that?
Reese's Minis. Do you guys have these over there?
We don't get Reese's cups at all, oddly. They're really difficult to find over here. And I do like Reese's peanut butter cups. I'm not a great lover of peanut butter, but I do like those.
You have no Reese's at all?
Yeah, you find it hard. You can get them, but you find it hard to find them.
Yeah.
Wow. They are my all-time favorite candy.
Yeah. Oh, God, they're so sickly.
They are sickly, but you can't eat too many of them.
And deadly to people like me.
Are you
Island peanut candy for the rest of my life? Reese's.
The Tom in the chat room saying, like, Twinkies. We don't get Twinkies over here at all. You can't find them unless you've got, like, an Americana store or something like that. Twinkies. But nothing lives in a Twinkie either. That's why they live for so long.
Have
you
ever had a Twinkie?
What survives a nuclear war? Cockroaches and Twinkies.
Exactly.
Trust me, mate. If you haven't had a Twinkie, don't feel like you're missing out. It's a textured.
Are they better than wagon wheels?
It's a textured sugar gush bar. That's it. I mean, it's pure sugar. The coating sugar, the wrapper sugar, the inside sugar, and that's it.
I tell you what, while I was in San Francisco, the best sweet store I've ever come across in the world is on Pier 39. And it was weird because they've got sweets from all over the world. They've got barrels of the stuff. And it was weird going past all the chocolate and stuff from the UK.
Very good.
Probably stuff from the old Woolworths pick and mix.
Yeah, it's just stuff from all over the world. I mean, it was amazing. I could have spent a fortune in there.
Very good. Mm. My pick is a piece of software that I've been having a play with this week. Now, one of the things that we set the Flickr group up for Bagel Tech Photo. So if you're a keen photographer, get yourself over to flickr.com/groups/BagelTechPhoto and join the group and start posting some of your stuff. We've got an assignment which is due at the end of the month, and I've got to shoot mine this weekend, otherwise it's not going to be done. And there's a lot of people on there who have been saying, how do I do this? Because I made a few comments like, oh, you should just straighten the vertical on this because it's clearly off skew and stuff. And they said, well, how do you do that? So I've given them a little link chain of commands in Photoshop to change it. And they've gone, oh, I haven't got Photoshop. I'm going to go and buy Essentials 9 or Essentials 8 this weekend, but I don't know how to use it. So I've thought about doing some kind of little screencasts like Don McAllister does, only not as good, of how to do basic things within Photoshop and stick them online. And I've been playing with ScreenFlow from Telestream. Now, they've sponsored us, and next month we're going to be giving away a copy of Wirecast to one person who's a lucky listener. But they've given me a copy for evaluation of ScreenFlow, and I've been sitting playing with it this week, and it is effortless. I mean, it is steamingly effortless. It's, you record over it. The audio, it's not doing so well at the moment, so I'm recording the audio separately. But even when you've done that, if you start them at the right time, all you've got to do is take the audio and drag it over and just drop it in, and it's already in place. If you then want to edit both the audio and the video tracks and start taking out mistakes and pulling stuff forward, it's no harder than doing it in an audio software system like Audacity or Logic. It really is just effortless. And for $99, I think it's actually not a bad buy. So that's ScreenFlow from Telestream. Go to telestream.com. You can have a play, download a free version, and see what you think. But it gets my recommendation, definitely. Last word goes to our sponsors, UK2.net. We are indebted to them. We keep saying this every week. But you cannot make a bigger contribution to the Bagel Tech Network than going to our homepage. And when you get there, just scrolling down to the bottom, looking for the UK2 .net logo and clicking on it. If you click on that, they will know that we have sent you. Don't go to them direct. If you want to sign into your account, even, you can still use that link, and they'll know that you're a Bagel Tech listener. They're not looking at all the click-throughs of people that are going to buy. They're looking that Bagel Tech promotes UK2, and if you come through this link, they're going to know that Bagel Tech people are supporting Bagel Tech and supporting UK2. They do pick up everything that we have as a charge. We've gone a little bit mental again this month already. We're just about the same amount of data as we used last month. They've picked up the charges for everything. We've got a new show starting tomorrow, which is Bagel Tech Unexplained. There's a little promo on YouTube if you want to go and have a look. That could be a lot of fun because it's all kinds of stuff that we have absolutely no idea what we're talking about. Please support UK2. If you're thinking of buying anything, e-commerce stuff, that kind of thing, go in and get it, and we'll love you to bits, and so will they. A lot of special offers at the moment. If you buy anything from them, make sure you use the offer code BagelTech. If you're buying VPS services or if you're buying co-location services, the BagelTech logo, the BagelTech coupon, rather, will get you a free month on both of those services. And the co-location services, you're going to get an iPad 2 free of charge as well. So, please click that link, uk2.net. We couldn't exist without them. It is that simple. You must support them if you want to support us. Where can we get a hold of you, just to finish off, Mr. James?
I'm on the internet. And I've got a megaphone. Twitter.com/SYZYGY Syzygy is where I wrote most of my ridiculous aphorisms.
Jolly good, mate. Mike, where can we get hold of you?
I'm on Twitter at iMike, I-M-Y-K-E, and you can find links to everything I do at thepodcastingproject.com.
Excellent, mate. Thank you for coming on tonight. I know we gave you a bit of short notice. I do apologise.
No, it's a pleasure.
Changing the nights has caused a few issues. Sarah, free of jet lag, where can we get you, mate?
You can get hold of me on my website, which is sarahjaneuk.com, or on Twitter at sarahjaneuk.
And finally, last but by no means least, Mr. Eric Lanigan.
You find me at Reese's.com. No, ericlanigan.com and twitter.com/ericlanigan, E-R-I-K-L-A-N-I-G-A-N. Got to spell it.
And the host of Tech Talkback on the Twit Network on Thursdays. Phoning show that we can all dial in from the UK for as well, can't we? It's not just a Yank fest.
You can. And you know, I think this is, people don't realize they can call in because you get a show every now and then, like today, where no one calls and the chat room is active and there's everyone's got an opinion, but no one calls and I've got no one to talk to. So if you're wondering where Tech Talkback is this week, it may be lost to the ether.
Oh, right. Okay. You say it's a crap show.
Yeah. Not afraid to admit it. It was a slow news week.
It is. But I think the one thing that you shouldn't do is let people know that it distresses you, because then they do it just and they tune in just to watch you sweat, dude. Make out like you're loving it and you love the sound of your own voice, and then they'll ring in and try and break you off.
Yeah, good point.
Right, we'll be back again next week on Friday, unless we realise that Thursday was actually a lot more fun and we might do it Thursday. And we have more people in the chat room on a Thursday than we've had on a Friday. That might be an indicator as well. We've got tomorrow, the Bagel Tech Photo Show is on at 11. And then tomorrow afternoon, we've got a real fun packed afternoon. We've got the Mac Show at 1 o'clock. And then at 3:30, we've got Bagel Tech Unexplained, which will be inexplicable probably by the end of it. So come along and have some fun with that. We have no idea what we're going to cover in that show yet. It's me, Will Green, and Andy Stevenson talking about everything that's X-Files based, ghosts, you know, aliens, anything you want to talk about, we'll have it. So chat room interaction will be much appreciated there. And then, of course, there's nothing tomorrow night because we've done it tonight. See you next week. Thanks ever so much for listening.